For the trumpet by Bach, that was the English trumpeter Alison Balsam, Colin Carey, organ, and part of a trumpet concerto by Bach.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for listening to this beautiful classical programming. If talk programming of a different nature is something that might suit you, let me suggest some great opportunities for that here at 89.3 FM. Friday mornings from 10 until 11 a.m., it's the new WHFR Journal, hosted by Mr. Jay Koronick and sometimes special guest hosts, and you will find an opportunity there to hear the latest of what's going on here in Dearborn, in the community, some local news and views that you just don't want to miss. Also, Saturday mornings, 10 until 11, it's a show we call The Forum. Every week, it's a different opportunity to learn about different subjects. We have Metaphysically Speaking, Pet Lover's Lane, We Are Not Alone, and Then and Now. Great opportunities to learn a variety of bits of information that you just won't hear anywhere else. It's talk programming at its best right here on 89.3 FM.
And good morning to our WHFR loyal listeners. I am Susan Morell, and I'm joining you today, sitting in for Jay Koronick, who is at a professional conference somewhere in a sunny location. And also sitting in with me is Kristen Risbeck.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kristen. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning, Susan.
Glad to see you. And we're going to present to you, Jay was at the Republican convention here in Dearborn this week, and so he recorded his insights from that exciting venue, and we're going to present that to you just shortly here. And then we have Carrie Zaitz with the Night Sky Report. And this is the new WHFR Journal for October 12th, 2007. After our famous introduction. And we have lots of news and views today, right, Kristen?
Absolutely.
So Kristen's been away for a while. We haven't seen her. And what's new and exciting these days, Kristen? Anything?
Well, I've just been very busy with business. I started a publication here in Metro Detroit called Behind the Scenes Media. So my time has been very consumed.
Okay, so
amongst other things, I guess.
So you're a publisher.
Yes, I'm publisher of Behind the Scenes Media. It's basically a resource for opportunities in the media and entertainment industry, such as if you're an actor or a director or a dancer, a choreographer, whatever, you're going to want to turn to that publication for.
Okay, so
you know,
a woman of
resource.
A woman of many talents.
Yes.
And she's self-published, and you use what type of computer program for self-publishing?
Well, I have people doing a lot of graphic design work for me and all that, but the main is the Creative Suite. It's a very incredible, but very how can I put it? Incredible program, but you need to know what you're doing. That's for sure.
Okay, and so you do know what you're doing, right?
So that's, I like to think so.
Well, that's great. You know, Kristen is multi-talented, one of our very multi-talented staff members here at WHFR, and she's done a lot of great production work right here at WHFR.
Yeah. She was, this is a great radio station.
Yeah, you know? It is.
I mean, it's everyone's volunteer other than a few key staff here, but, you know, everyone's volunteer, DJs, you know, producers, whatever you want to call everybody. It's a really great station. You can be part of it, too, if you really want to. You just have to give us a call for more information.
Yes.
You know, if you ever wanted to be on the radio, you can give us a call at 845-9676. Boy, it's been so long since I've said it over the air.
And that's area code 313.
Yeah.
So we're right here on the beautiful campus of Henry Ford Community College in the city of Dearborn. And I guess the big news story this morning was that Al Gore has won a share of the Nobel Peace Prize. Former President Al Gore and the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change won the 2007 prize today for their efforts to spread awareness of man-made climate change and lay the foundations for our fight, or for our fight against global warming. Isn't that fantastic?
That is. That absolutely is. I don't actually know that much about the whole Nobel Prize business as far as what the criteria
is usually behind that, but
we all know that Al Gore has been a really full force person within the environment. I mean, some people think that if he had taken a stronger stance on his environmental beliefs and issues when he was running for president, that, you know, that might have
tipped.
Might have helped him a little bit more, although his advisors at the time were saying, no, pull back from that, you know, but I don't know. You never know about that kind of stuff.
Well, I think he did the wrong thing. I think he listened too much to the advisors and not to his own heart.
Yeah.
You know, and because I didn't know all these things about him until after the election, you know, when he made the movie An Inconvenient Truth and he came out with the concert. Live Earth, and he started doing all these fabulous things for the environment, and I just didn't even know he had that interest, so that was another dimension of his personality.
Oh, yeah, it's like a whole other life, other life of Al Gore.
The other life of Al Gore, and the Nobel Prizes each bestow a gold medal, a diploma, and a $1.5 million cash prize. So that's
okay, I need to get myself a Nobel Prize.
So that's not too bad, right?
No, that's not bad at all.
Not bad. Moving right along. So if we could only do...
$1.5 million. I wonder how much of that the government takes.
Well, I think he's planning on donating a lot of that to a charity.
Oh.
And I think if you do that, then the government doesn't take as much. Isn't that true?
I don't know.
That's what I've heard.
I mean, I'd like to think so, because that would be a benefit. But, you know, what's the charity that he heads?
Well, I don't know all of his personal finances.
I know he is involved in a lot of charities, but I'm sure he's probably good. Well, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but wouldn't be surprised if it ended up being donated to a charity that he is head of, an environmental cause,
of course. Wouldn't that be most appropriate?
Yes, absolutely. It sure would.
So the big event here in the city of Dearborn, and we've got to get local here for a minute because this is local news and views, and the big event here in Dearborn was the GOP debate. Republican debate, right here.
Smack dab here in Dearborn.
In your own city,
yeah,
Kristen.
I know. And I couldn't even go to it.
You didn't go?
No. Yeah, you had to have, like, a bunch of permission and all this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, which I understand to a certain, you know, degree,
yeah.
But... You know.
Yeah, the blah, blah, blah. That's not the fun part, you know. So, sometimes it's better to just sit home and watch these events on television because they're so well covered, and they were well covered in the media, and, you know, it's all over the paper. So we have a lot of commentary, and the host, our illustrious host, Jay Kornick, happened to get a press pass, and he went in person. How about that?
I know, lucky dog.
And so he has provided us with a lot of commentary, and so I'm going to attempt to bring that to us right now.
Yeah, I believe actually quite a few people had showed up for the event. But really quickly, just so you know, the ones that all of the GOP, the Republican candidates, basically are Thompson, Giuliani, Romney, McCain, Brownback, Paul, Tancredo, Huckabee, and Hunter. And I apologize if I pronounced any of those wrong. But let's go. Let's listen to what some of these comments bring to us.
This is Jay Kornick reporting from the Republican presidential debate on Tuesday, October 9th here in Dearborn. We're right on Michigan Avenue at the front of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And most noticeable in the front area here is a big demonstration of supporters for Ron Paul with a lot of their own signs and a lot of slogans that they're shouting in the background. So I asked for a spokesperson for the group, and the first person that was pushed up in front of the line here was this gentleman. Tell me your name and your title.
Hi, my name is Andy Sadlowski. I'm a supporter of Ron Paul.
And Andy, you mentioned before that you actually live in Ypsilanti.
Yes, that is correct.
And tell me about this demonstration. About how many do I see out here? About 50, 60 people?
So as far as we could see right now, but there's quite a few people out right now, and more trickling in as the debate nears.
You got to keep in mind that there's a lot of people that are at work right now that couldn't make it that also support Ron Paul.
That's right. They're going to be out of work soon. So you're going to be out there how long?
I'll be out here for a little bit. I still have to pick up my daughter from daycare. still, while they're debating, I still have other things to take care of course, like everyone else.
Real-world campaigners, that's the way I like to see. Well, it's very noticeable. It's a good thing to get the public to see this. I just went inside and found I had to watch the debate on television, even with my media credentials, so that didn't seem like any fun. Tell me briefly, and we have about five people standing around here, why Ron Paul?
Basically, if you've watched the elections for the last couple of years, one thing I've noticed is that, Democrats, Republicans, it's the same message that they have. It's no one's really taking a stance to make a difference. Ron Paul is actually giving us a chance, a person to vote for that will actually make change, get us out of the war, actually get rid of the Federal Reserve. They'll basically do a lot of things that'll better America and get us off this path towards
Empire building.
We have another gentleman that spoke before. Your name, sir?
Ken Sadlowski. I mean, he's a brother.
Ah, so it's a brother thing. Okay. Okay. Well, that's good. And besides the, I think, Ron Paul is unique in that he's the only Republican candidate that does want us out of this war as soon as possible. And I'm not sure how long that is. We'll let him say that. But besides the ending the war as soon as possible, what else, Sadowski number two, is your first name is?
Ken.
Ken, okay. Is your reason for supporting Ron Paul?
I love Ron Paul. He's a constitutionalist. He believes in small government. He believes that governments should be afraid of their citizens, not the other way around. We shouldn't be afraid of our government, and our government is growing, it seems, by the day. We have these huge programs that we need to get rid of. He's against, Homeland Security and all these things that take away our freedom. So I support Ron.
That's pretty unique stance. We have another gentleman. He might be the father. No. Oh, I guessed it. Okay. Father's name is?
Conrad Sadlowski.
Okay. Conrad, how did you get first involved with the Ron Paul campaign, and maybe you brought your sons in on it too?
I followed Ron Paul for many years. I know his record. I know he's a great American. He's a true blue follower of laissez-faire free enterprise, and I'm sick and tired of government intervention all my life. It's time to get him out.
Were you by any chance a supporter of his when he ran for president as a Libertarian candidate?
I was not, but I knew who he was. I was supporting other people at that time.
Okay. So all of you, the group here, the family, would call yourselves Republicans, but Ron Paul type Republicans,
exactly.
Maybe, yes?
Sure.
Yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, we got them all in on this. What about Michigan's situation? That's might be my last question. We've got an economy that's probably, more people out of work than any other state almost, I think. And we've got some difficult problems here. What could Ron Paul as president do? Again, maybe that's just a state issue, but we'll start with Andy first.
It'll be tough because the one problem that we have in the state is we still have a governor willing to tax us as a means of balancing the budget. Pretty much the same policies that we've been hearing over the years, whether it be from Democrats or Republicans. For the Ron Paul aspect, I would assume that, leadership would be key in showing us that, let's downsize a lot of the state government, let's downsize the federal government, take those savings and, get government off our backs.
More money could stay locally, Conrad?
Yes, I believe so. But more importantly, he would eliminate all these all these bad regulations on the auto industry. I mean, I'm talking about CAFE and regulations that are just stifling us, and it's about time we rid them off our backs.
Okay. Last but not least, Ken? Ron Paul, what could he do for Michigan? We're in pretty desperate straits here. Just set an example nationally, it's been said. What do we cut back on in Michigan? Close the prisons down or, I'm not trying to be facetious, but it's a difficult situation.
I understand. And to be completely honest with you, I really don't know how to answer the question. What I know is that we just need to return things to a state and local level. I mean, it's better managed that way. And, we don't have federal government breathing down our necks.
Well, my talk show is on Friday morning, folks, from 10 to 11. I won't be there, but this interview will. And one of the things about the show is we do believe that what matters to you most is what's local. So glad we were able to catch you. At least it's a nice day. Get a nice suntan out here. And you're very visible, and it looks like a lot of people are honking horns and showing concern here. So thank you for being with us on the WHFR Journal.
During the debate, totaling 120 minutes, Ron Paul got only about 6 minutes to respond. But here's Ron Paul's answer to the recession.
Yes, I think this is not a consequence of free markets. What's happening is there's transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the wealthy. This comes about because of a monetary system that we have. When you inflate a currency or destroy a currency, the middle class gets wiped out. So the people who get to use the money first, which is created by the Federal Reserve System, benefit. So the money gravitates to the banks and to Wall Street. So that's why you have more billionaires than ever before. Today, this country is in the middle of a recession for a lot of people. Michigan knows about it. Poor people know about it. The middle class knows about it. Wall Street doesn't know about it. Washington, D.C. doesn't know about it. But it's because of the monetary system and the excessive spending. As long as we live beyond our means, we are destined to live beneath our means. And we have lived beyond our means because we are financing a foreign policy that is so extravagant and beyond what we can control, as well as the spending here at home. And we're depending on the creation of money out of thin air, which is nothing more than the debasement of the currency. It's counterfeit, and it is a natural, predictable consequence that you're going to have people benefit from it and other people suffer. So if you want a healthy economy, you have to study monetary theory and figure out why it is that we're suffering, and everybody doesn't suffer equally or this wouldn't be so bad. It's always the poor people, those on retired incomes, that suffer the most. But the politicians and those who get to use the money first, like the military-industrial complex, they make a lot of money and they benefit from it.
Here's Ron Paul's response to a question about Iraq oil from NBC's Chris Matthews.
Of going to war in Iraq if we weren't so dependent on Middle East oil.
Probably not, but that should not be a reason. That's an old theory. It's mercantilistic. It's neocolonialism that you have to maintain your supply routes and your natural resources. But I think there's still a lot of those kind of people around, and they believe, you know, we were told it was about oil and jobs when it first started in 1990, and this is just a continuation of that war. Indeed, this war is a mistake, was a mistake to go in. It's very costly, and it has a lot of economic ramifications. We're going broke. We have this huge deficit. We're spending nearly $1 trillion with maintaining our empire overseas, and that's a cost. Right now, we own foreigners $2.7 trillion. No wonder they have money to come back in here and buy stuff up, and then we object. But that has to do with our monetary system as well as our foreign policy. So if we want prosperity, we have to change our foreign policy. We have to live within our means, but we can't maintain a reserve currency where all our greatest export today are paper dollars. We create money out of thin air, and they still accept it as if it was backed by gold. And that is the reason all this money goes overseas, and at the same time we finance all this military activity overseas. It's bankrupting this country. And not only that, it's a threat to our personal liberties here, and it's going to be a threat to our economy because we are beginning to live beneath our means. And that is a natural consequence of what happens when you live beyond your means. So we must change our policy both overseas and domestically.
Finally, Ron Paul was asked, would you support another Republican candidate?
Not right now, I don't. Not unless they're willing to end the war and bring our troops home, and not unless they're willing to look at the excessive spending. No, I'm not going to support them if they continue down the path which has taken our party down the tubes. I mean, we've lost credibility because of all our spending, because we have violated the civil liberties of all the American people, and we have adopted the Democrats' foreign policy. Why don't we run on George Bush's foreign policy of a humble foreign policy and no nation building, and don't police the...
So I hope you enjoyed that glimpse of the opinions of Dr. Ron Paul, another politician not receiving equal attention by the news media. In summary, briefly, I found it discouraging to see what news coverage has become. A few of the 60 or more news reporters in attendance had even written their stories in advance of the debate, later editing in the juiciest sound bites that happened to fit their predecided angles. Okay, now, all content aside, besides Ron Paul, I was impressed by the performances of Brownback and Huckabee. I better Google them to find out more. Brownback and Huckabee. Most presidential looking, always Milt Romney. And a person who I would not want to have to meet in a dark alley, Rudy Giuliani. Well, of course, you decide who you would like to have for president, if it happens to be one from the Republican Party. I would finally conclude by saying that there's a lot more campaign to go, and there's a lot more candidates, not just Democrat and Republicans, but a lot more candidates still to be heard from. Let's hope that the commercial news media does a better job at giving you folks a chance to make the right choices. This is Jay Koronick for WHFR News and the WHFR Journal. And take care out there.
Okay, so we're back, and we just heard from Jay on location in Dearborn at the GOP debate. What do you think, Kristen?
Well, that was very interesting. I mean, we definitely got to hear a lot about Ron Paul and how he feels about the governmental situation that's going on, and even a little bit there about the ball supporters of Ron Paul and the Michigan economy and what's happening there. I agree with Jay that it's very, very sad that so many of these news reports that people will be receiving or did receive or will be reading were pre-written, are very already set on who they're going to vote for, regardless of even listening to what the issues are, simply because of, you know, who they are or, you know, what party they represent. And just a fair warning, I guess, to anyone who's listening right now, is that you need to get your resources from a multitude number of places. I mean, you will find different opinions, even on Ron Paul out there. And Rudy Giuliani. I have a comment about that, too. But now What about you, Susan?
Well,
I got
the editorial page of the Detroit Free Press, and there were a couple of letters that were written in to the paper. And this one is from Howard Feynman, and that's from MSNBC.com. And he says, the real news of the night was buried at the end when candidates Ron Paul and Tom Tancredo both made it clear that they might not support the GOP nomination or the GOP nominee. Get ready for a third or fourth party candidacy. One against the war, perhaps teaming up with a Democrat, and the other against illegal immigration. Wouldn't that be interesting? The two big hot issues.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough one too. When you jump around like that, well, I guess you're following your belief, but you're also making it look like you don't stick.
I don't know. I kind of feel like there's room for a third party out there. I mean, I'm kind of disillusioned with both parties at this point. I see good things and bad things in each one, and I just feel like, gosh, we've got such gridlock in Washington, D.C., and nothing seems to be getting done over the past few years that the people want. And I'm just very, very discouraged, because you vote for people, they get in, they don't do what they said they were going to do, promises, that kind of thing. And here's another letter into the Detroit Free Press. This is from Richard Rising of Novi. And he says, not since the Republican debate did I hear anyone suggest making the United States the economic and manufacturing giant that it once was. I heard no one suggest that we start using our vast God-given resources, especially energy sources, such as coal and oil. They all seem to be on the politically correct choo-choo train that is rapidly losing the race to China, which is improving its economic status in leaps and bounds. Now, that's a pretty scary thought if you really start thinking about China.
Yeah.
And what they've been accomplishing in their economy these days. And nobody says much about them, and let's not forget, they are a communist country.
Yes. Yes, they are a communist country. I'd like to think that one of the reasons why I think so many political contenders stay on that safe political path, as what that gentleman was discussing, is because not enough of the general public get involved. I would almost say that a great majority, just like yourself, Susan, you're very disillusioned with both the Democratic and the Republican Party, as am I. I don't consider myself either one, actually. I consider myself an independent, and I vote for whoever I believe is the best candidate at that time.
I'm an independent, too.
Right, which you talk to a lot of people, and that's kind of, I mean, there are those diehard, you know, Democrats, those diehard Republicans. But I think if more independents got a little bit more involved, you know, for example, there was this article in the Press and Guide on Wednesday, and a student is quoted as saying about Brownback here, is that I like his approach on a lot of things, including the war in Iraq. It's just a shame he's a Republican.
Well, I mean, I'm at the point where, yes, I mean, I would vote either way if I found the right candidate.
Right. It's kind of that type of mentality where you can still vote, even though you may be registered as a Democrat, you can still vote for a Republican, you know, unless you do a straight ticket. If you do a straight ticket, obviously not. you know, or you just vote strictly for the Republican or Democratic parties. But I think that a lot of people, because of the war in Iraq and what's going on, more and more people are turning towards both party candidates and starting to realize, okay, you know what, maybe this whole supporting one side over the other is not necessarily the way I want to go at this point. You know, this person who's a Democrat obviously is realizing here, wow, I can support this person even though I'm a Republican. I think it's not until we stop looking at ourselves as Democrat and Republican or Libertarian or, you know, Green Party or whatever you want to classify yourself as. If we just start looking, you know, I don't know, I'm a little bit of an idealist, as all is one, you know, and we're all in the same thing here.
Well,
you know,
that's
we'd all
true.
Want a better life and a better economy and a better, you know.
That is true. That is true. And I couldn't agree more. I think you are totally, totally right on. And with that opinion, and of course, we want to continue our discussion here of the GOP debate right here in the city of Dearborn. And you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is the new WHFR Journal. And I'm Susan Rell, and Kristen Risbeck is here with me today.
Yes, and I must remind everybody, our little disclaimer here, that those opinions expressed here on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College. They are strictly of Susan and myself. That is our opinions here. We're not speaking for anyone else but ourselves.
Well, that is so true, and I want to add, please don't kill the messenger. Remember that one?
Yeah.
So let's emphasize that as well. And we have another commentary here. This is also from the Free Press. This is from Stephen Henderson. And this is from Wednesday, October 10th. And his comments are as follows. He says, there was precious little about the supposed topic of the day. And the topic of the day is Michigan and its pressing economic issues. The implicit message is not reassuring. Michigan and the places it would like to be able to look for help would not be the GOP White House. That's probably not a surprise to many people here, but it was startling to see 9 presidential hopefuls so insistently dodge this state's issues for 2 full hours. The debate also made clear just how much the GOP despises any tax for any purpose levied against any American. The candidates talked more about taxes than almost anything else. It would have been nicer to see them frame the issues a little more around a Michigan spin, even if it was just to show that they had given our problems some thought. Now that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, but that also goes back to the other gentleman's letter about playing it politically safe. You know, most presidential candidates always talk about taxes, always talk about Medicare and Social Security. You know, I mean, they're two hot topics, and that's even mentioned, too, in the pressing guide that, some took the opportunity to push for a flat tax, while others warned that the Social Security and Medicare costs had to be corralled. And I wonder, because I was not able to see that much of it or hear all the questions involved, maybe you know, were the candidates specifically asked questions that related to Michigan?
Well, I personally did not see the whole debate because I was delinquent in my political responsibilities this week, and I was watching my favorite show, Dancing with the Stars.
Well, it's kind of like you only get to see so much of the debate, so you don't necessarily know everything that was asked either. I'm assuming that these people who wrote into the letters of the editor, you know, the ones that you were quoting, that maybe they got to hear more of the questions than what I did from little clips, you know, in the news.
But I mean, seriously, and, Kristen, even without being asked the questions, I mean, I think it's a foregone knowledge that everybody in the USA knows that Michigan's economy has been in doldrums for years now, since basically the last recession, and that we have the highest unemployment rate of any state in the country. And that's been the case for a long, long time now.
Yeah.
And so I feel it was kind of their responsibility to kind of address that somehow in one of their answers.
Yeah, they could have. No, you're correct. They could have taken a question that was given to them, whether it related to Michigan or not, and relate it to Michigan.
I mean, since
they
you are
brought that
a guest
aspect in it, yes.
And you're in the city of Dearborn, which is the home of Ford Motor Company. Hello.
You know,
we're going through a major crisis with the Big Three. We just had a strike at GM last week, and now this week the other big story here in Michigan is that the UAW had a strike and they settled.
Yeah, I think it lasted like 7 hours or something to that effect.
And that was, the topic around town and the state. And so let's get a little bit into that issue. They made a deal, and it's a tentative agreement. Fundamentally similar to the UAW GM Pact, where they have a GM-like retiree health care trust known as a Voluntary Employee Beneficiary Association, or VEBA, V-E-B-A, and that will wipe billions off of Chrysler's private balance sheet. And then job security was an issue, and then, of course, wages and benefits. And so that's all part of their package. And Jay and I were talking last week about the GM deal, and healthcare was the big glitch for GM, that they said their costs were too high for healthcare. And Ron Gettelfinger wants to make the VEBA kind of a lobbyist organization and to promote universal healthcare to the government. To the U.S. government. So that's kind of one of his goals. And another question that we haven't really talked about, and the unions are always having to negotiate their benefits and their pay and their packages, but the executives never want to talk about their own pay packages. So that's also a stickler. And this is what Ron Gettelfinger says. He says, as much as workers do, workers cannot do enough. And as much as executives get, they cannot get enough. And, they're complaining and complaining about the hourly wages and benefits. But why do the executives continue to be awarded the top bonuses? Here they have a little chart of the pay differences among automaker CEOs. GM was at the top. Their package total is $27.8 million. Rick Wagner, CEO, $9.3 million. The other top four executives, $18.5 million. At Ford, Ford is $53.8 million for six executives. CEO Alan Mulally, $27.8 million. Wow, he gets as much as all the GM guys together. And the other top five executives, $26 million. Chrysler has the lowest executive package for two executives. Their total is $7.4 million. And the former CEO got $5.1 million. And the other top executive, $2.1 million. So their costs are lower. And listen to this, Toyota, their whole package for 37 executives is $21.6 million. So that's lower than Ford or GM.
And it's still up there, though.
And yeah, it's still up there. It's pretty high. But Toyota's making more money than any other car company. They're more profitable. And then Honda, their 21 executives, total $11.1 million. So they've cut their costs for quite a bit for their executives. So what say Kristen? Let's hear Kristen on that one.
Okay. Yes, I think that these packages and bonuses and benefits have gotten exorbitant. They're just going through the roof. However, I do not have issues with people who are higher up within an organization or those people who started the organization or their families that started it with being wealthy. I don't disgruntle those people for earning the life or even their parents handing it necessarily to them, as you know, because it came down through the family line or whatever. I mean, that is something that kind of is their right, if that is their parents' wishes to have that come their way. I'm not a big believer in living off the backs of others, though, either. So it's kind of I'd like to find a nice balance between the, you know, middle class working man and these high paying executives. It would be nice to see a middle road. But everyone is just going to keep fighting and fighting and fighting about that as to who deserves how much and who doesn't.
Well, here's what the union says, and they say that individual work does not count the most in this kind of environment. It's all about teamwork. So when you have it all about teamwork, everybody is working supposedly as hard as they can.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Supposedly. But then you also get into the personal lines, the personal issues of who has a work ethic, who doesn't, who's just there for a free ride, who's there just for the, you know. I don't blame the big three at all, or any major corporation for that matter, for wanting to shrug off the responsibility of health care. I completely understand their complaints with that and having to provide that. It has just gotten so out of control, healthcare in general, that I think even corporations have a right to complain, even the ones higher up.
Absolutely. We need to...
I think if more people were responsible for their own healthcare, or if the government was responsible for the healthcare, perhaps medical costs wouldn't be so phenomenally high.
Well, we're in favor of universal healthcare right here on WHFR, and we talk about that quite often. But I got another article here. This is from the Christian Science Monitor, and they have an article by Mark Trumbull, and he's the staff writer. And he says, the UAW contract struggled with thorny issues that are facing the entire workforce, and healthcare is one of the issues that facing all American workers, and all American workers are looking for new answers, not just the status quo. And he says the central problem remains the same, and that is whether workers are getting their fair share of a growing economy. And the disconnect between growth and living standards is something very much in the public debate. And it's been a great period of productivity growth, and workers have some of the least clout of anyone in this economy. Most of the large share of income has been flowing to upper-income Americans. And so this pattern is extending beyond the United States. It's in Japan, the European Union, and many developing nations. And the trend toward income equality is the same. So that's a huge issue. It's an economic worldwide issue.
Which is really hitting home right now here in the Dearborn area.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely, you know, a national, if not global, issue. But it's really hitting home for a lot of people right now here in Dearborn.
Yeah, this is what one of his projections is in this article. He has a comment from economist John Schmidt from the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. He says, well, labor law reform may take place in some form in the 2008 election, as well as national health care reform.
Yeah.
So those are issues among the issue of free trade. And we have to be concerned about workers left behind.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The thing is, though, is all those issues are up every presidential debate. No, sir, it's always the same. It's always the same issues. Now, of course, now we have the war in Iraq obviously is a very hot topic issue as well, added to those. But they're all pretty general, I hate to call it general issues, that appear, you know, every election. and miraculously, not a whole lot changes.
Well, you know? Yeah, but, you know, the labor movement used to be much, much stronger than it was, and that's how we formed the UAW and the AFL-CIO and all these groups, and how these workers at the big three generated so much income and benefits for themselves, and they were into, let's share the wealth.
Right.
You know, that was the concept, and that's, gosh, that made Michigan a wealthy state. You know,
for a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I do think that if you take care of your workers, there's more company loyalty. Company loyalty has just flown out the door because people don't feel that they are getting what they deserve. And it was interesting to me. This will crack you up. He's going to kill me probably for using him on this, but. I'll just say, okay, a friend who worked for Ford what was it? 5 years, I believe. Never had a sick day, didn't have a days off, they're all the time. Yeah, or whatever.
Very dedicated.
Yes, very, very, very dedicated, but also had an incredible work ethic. Well, his reward was a keychain.
A keychain?
A keychain that said Ford on it. Now, it was a nice keychain. But it said Ford. Now, how does that improve company morale? How does something like that make you want to work for that company? You know, or want to work that hard for somebody.
Gee, no party, no celebration.
It was just kind of thank you for your rewarding work.
A beautiful desk with a view or something? I don't know.
Now, I'm not saying that people may be higher up within the industry. Obviously, executives get all these bonuses and all this kind of stuff. So I'm just saying that I think if they did share the wealth a little bit more, you know, or did some things to recognize those people that actually were putting in, you know, more than due diligence to their companies, that maybe they wouldn't be in as much of an issue as they are today.
Well, that's one of the issues, company loyalty. How can you be loyal when you're constantly afraid of losing your job? And we do have 7.4% unemployment rate here state of Michigan. It's outrageous. And but there are, you know, there's a job training, a new job training program in Detroit, and opening by our mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, in Detroit. And it's going to be one of the four new career centers. It was opened this week, aimed at helping unemployed workers and people on public assistance find jobs in healthcare, retail, hospitality, and other fields. This presents an opportunity to do an overhaul of the city's troubled workforce development department. And they say that the old case management model does not work. And so they're already training people to work in healthcare. And they're going to open a second center to train people in the retail and hospitality fields. And then two more centers are going to open to focus on construction, transportation, and logistics. So lots more training available for people who truly, truly need it, and to put people to work so that they can pay some taxes, help pay some taxes, right? Because we have higher taxes here now in Michigan, right?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer Granholm.
Ms. Granholm.
And the... Michigan legislature, but they had to do it. And
I disagree. I don't think they had to do it.
Go ahead, Kristen.
I'm a big believer that there is so much government waste out there with our tax money already that I do believe that there could have been ways that that could have been avoided. Yes. And unfortunately, people just don't want to, you know, give up things. We're in a world of you know, wants, as Ron Paul put it, living beyond our means. Oh. Everybody wants to live beyond their means.
Well.
You know, and it's just kind of, Well, if you want to live beyond your means, then you got to pay the consequences, and that's government, you know, that's government as well, and unfortunately those consequences are passed along to us, the taxpayers. So...
Well, I agree. We do need to live within our means, and I think that there is a huge deficit, you know, as part of the Washington spending program, and they're running deficits every year, and I'm totally against it because I think we need more spending on things that we need here at home. But also, did you know, Kristen, that stock options are a tax loophole?
You know what? I don't actually know that much about stocks because to me, stocks is almost kind of like gambling. And well, I don't gamble necessarily with my money.
Yeah, we were talking about the CEO executive pay in the auto industry. And we've got an article by U.S. Senator Carl Levin. And this is in the Press and Guide from Wednesday, October 10th. And he says that stock options are a key part of the compensation paid to U.S. corporate executives. And he says that's why their pay is so high, because a company can claim a tax deduction, which is usually far higher than the expense they put on their books when the options were granted. How about that? And that allows the corporations to avoid paying billions of dollars in taxes each year. And guess who makes up for all that lost revenue?
Well, of course. That's you and I do.
We do.
Right.
The rest of us.
Right.
And so he, Carl Levin, has introduced a bill to end the stock option double standard. And it's called the Ending Corporate Tax Favors for Stock Options Act. Well, that's a mouthful, but I said it. What can I say?
Well, see, there's a good example, though, Susan, of there you go.
Exactly.
If that wasn't allowed or didn't happen, all those billions of dollars would be funding the appropriate programs and would not need to, the tax would not need to be raised. But see, people don't want to give up things.
Well, that's true. And he says in the article that the average CEO is paid nearly 400 times as much as the average worker. That's a huge difference. And this stock option tax, in addition to the accounting rules, are out of kilter, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it is out of kilter.
So that should go through. And, we've covered a lot of hard, serious news here on WHFR, haven't we?
Well, I have something fun, I guess.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, well, I'd like to say Eid Mubarak, which is a blessed Eid, as that is today. I don't know if many of you are aware of that or not. I know East Dearborn is greatly, and a good portion of West Dearborn as well. It is the end of Ramadan today. The first sighting of the new moon, you know, had been announced, and today is the day. I was actually trying to get some friends of mine who are Muslims to come in, but of course they couldn't come in today because at 9 a.m. this morning they had the prayers going on and all that, your festivities, and they will all day long. Eid actually lasts 3 days long, but today is the big day of it. In order to understand Eid, you have to understand Ramadan. In order to understand Ramadan, you have to understand that they follow a lunar calendar, which is not compared to our calendar. It's about 11 to 12 days shorter, actually. So Ramadan actually moves throughout the year, each year, whereas 2008 is actually going to be basically the entire month of September. So they do fasting all day long, the Muslims, and it starts right before daybreak in the morning, so I can't even imagine how early they've been having to get up. Imagine when it's in January. Holy cow, they've probably got to get up so early. And then at the end of the evening, well, they say they fast all day long. It's a time of focusing on their lives, on their religion. And a lot of people actually could, if you wanted to compare it, especially Eid, you could compare it to, you know, our Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. The when I say our, I'm talking the Christian holidays. But, you know, then they have this big old party, which starts today. So, you know, I wish them, well, basically, you know, what I said, a blessed Eid, Eid Mubarak. And hope that they have a great Shawwal, too, which is, you know, the starting of the next month. Ramadan is actually the name of the month.
Oh,
I don't know. You know,
okay.
I don't know if you knew that.
No,
or not.
I didn't.
Not only is it the name of the holiday, but it's also the name of the month from new moon to new moon.
Well, all right. I'm in favor of a party.
Yeah.
We need more parties to cheer us up around here. But I just want to mention that this week is Fire Safety Week. And in the city of Novi, they have the Fire Safety Dog Tours at an open house this coming Saturday. And that will start at 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the fire station, Fire Station 1 at 42975 Grand River Avenue. And attendees can meet Sparky, the fire safety dog, learn safety trips, tour the fire station, see demonstrations, and also there is an opportunity for those interested in firefighter jobs. If you're looking for a job, you can talk to a recruiter.
Well, there you go. There's an avenue.
Hey, so go there and have fun and talk to a recruiter and get a job.
Yeah, and Fire Station 2 is actually, tomorrow, is having a open house in a pumpkin patch.
And that's in Dearborn.
Yep. And that's here in Dearborn, the Dearborn Fire Department.
Yeah.
They're located on Outer Drive, just north of Michigan. So, you know, I think it's like a $5 donation for their pumpkin patch or whatever. And they're a great fire station.
Absolutely, they are. And also, we've got Halloween is coming up, so let's not forget that. And in Clinton Township, dogs and owners can win prizes for the best costumes. That will be like so much fun. Parks and Recreation Department will host a free doggy costume contest at 10 a.m. on October 27th in the Doggy Park on the Civic Center grounds at Romeo Plank and Canal. There will be two categories, one judging for dog costumes and the other contest for the dog and their owner. And all participants will receive gifts and refreshments. And for additional information, give them a call at 586-286-9336. So, there we have it. And let's not forget that the Dearborn Animal Shelter is having a fundraiser at the Dearborn Inn, a champagne reception, dinner, dancing, and auctions. We'll highlight the Black Tie and Tails fundraiser, prompted by the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter. That is October 19th at the Dearborn Inn. Starts at 7 p.m. with a parade of adorable pets and the sale of pet items. The Master of Ceremonies will be Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. And tickets are a little pricey. They're $175. But if you get dressed up in your best attire, you won't mind. So,
it's an excuse to dress up. No.
So visit their website at dearborn-animals.com. So we've got to go to our night sky report now with Carrie Zaitz, and I want to thank you so much, Kristen, for joining me here today on the new WHFR channel.
Absolutely, Susan, and Jay Kornack will be back next week.
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your night sky report. Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your night sky report. From the nuclear furnace at the core to the extremely hot plasma of its corona, the sun is the definition of hot. Far from the giant ball of fire we learned about in first grade, it is more accurately described as a sphere of plasma. Plasma is not a common everyday household item, but you know of plasma. Lightning is an example. If you've seen the northern lights, you are seeing a colorful display of plasma. Plasma is hot, ionized gas. The sun has plenty of plasma. Like other stars, it supports itself from the crushing weight of gravity by fusing hydrogen atoms at its core. Pressures and temperatures being what they are at the core of the sun, atoms that normally don't like being all that close will overcome their repulsion and fuse together. In this process, they release prodigious amounts of energy. It was actually the icon scientist Albert Einstein who quantified exactly how much energy in his famous equation E equals mc squared. In English, this equation says that you can get an enormous amount of energy out of a little bit of mass. The variable c stands for the speed of light, which is a very big quantity. And if you square it, it becomes super big. So no matter how small your mass, if you multiply it by the speed of light squared, you have a very big number. And that is E, the amount of energy you can get from it. This idea opened up a world of hurt. Here on Earth, we have harnessed the power of fission to unleash energy from an atom. We have figured out how to take a heavy element like uranium and fission it by tossing a neutron at it. By splitting a very heavy element like uranium, we can release exorbitant amounts of energy. Unfortunately, a byproduct of this process is radioactive material called waste due to its unpleasantness and difficulty of disposal without harm to humans. We use our knowledge for good in our nuclear power plants, but also for bad in our nuclear bombs. Hiroshima and Nagasaki both felt the power of the unleashed nuclear fission. Stars don't fizz, they fuse. Stars release energy through nuclear fusion. The sun isn't filled with heavy elements like uranium. All they have at their disposal to keep alive is hydrogen. Luckily, the universe decided that elements lighter than iron would be better off if they fused rather than fissioned. The sun has lots of light elements to fuse, and so it does it at will. This releases the life-giving energy that we receive some 93 million miles away. We seem to have a very advantageous spot in the solar system. Think about toasting marshmallows on a stick. When you get too close to the fire, you end up with a crispy marshmallow that you have to snuff before popping into your mouth to hear the sizzle of your own saliva. If the marshmallow is too far from the fire, it remains cool and solid, not the most pleasing form of the food product. I find it both fascinating and reassuring that the Earth maintains the place of a well-browned marshmallow. Not too close to the nuclear furnace and not too far. It's just right to keep us comfortable. So even with our changing temperatures and seasons, we can be grateful for our place in space. Until next week, my friends, enjoy the view.